48. Under full power, Bloodhound threw a bow wave 10 feet high, and a wake that boiled out for quarter of a mile behind her, a long, faintly phosphorescent smear in the darkness. Aboard Blucher, 100 pairs of eyes were straining out into the night, watching for that phosphorescence. Behind the battle lights on her upper works, men waited. In the dimly lit turrets, men waited. On the open bridge, at the masthead, deep in her belly, the crew of Blucher waited. Von Kleiner had reduced speed to lessen his own wake, and turned away from the land at an angle of 45 degrees. He wanted to catch the Englishman on his starboard beam out of torpedo range. He stood peering out across the dark sea, with the fur-lined collar of his overcoat drawn up to his ears. The night was cool. The sea was a black immensity, vast as the sky, that was lined in glowing ivory by the whorls and smears of the star patterns. A dozen men saw it at the same instant. Pale, ethereal, seeming to float upon the darkness of the sea like a plume of iridescent mist, the wake of the Englishman. "Starshell!" Von Kleiner snapped the order to the waiting guns. He was alarmed by the English destroyer's proximity. He had hoped to spot her at greater range. High above the ocean, the star shells burst blue-white, so intensely bright as to sear the retina of the eye that looked directly at them. Beneath them, the surface of the sea was polished ebony, sculpted and scooped with the patterns of the swells. The two ships were starkly and crisply lit, steaming on converging courses, already so close to each other that the mile-long, solid white beam of their battle lights jumped out to join, fumbling together like the hands of hesitant lovers. In almost the same second, both ships opened fire, but the banging of Bloodhound's little 4.7-inch guns was lost in the bellow of the cruiser's broadside. Blucher was firing over open sights, with her guns depressed until the long barrels were horizontal to the surface of the sea. Her first salvo was aimed a fraction high, and the huge shells howled over Bloodhound's open bridge. The wind of their passage, the fierce draught of disrupted air they threw out, caught Charles Little and sent him reeling against the compass pinnacle. He felt the ribs below his armpit crack. The command he shouted at the helm was hoarse with pain. "Turn 4 points to port! Steer for the enemy!" And Bloodhound spun like a ballet dancer and charged again at the Blucher. The cruiser's next broadside was high again, but now her secondary armament had joined in, and a 4-pound shell from one of the quick-firing pom-poms burst onto the director tower above Bloodhound's bridge. It swept the exposed area with a buzzing hailstorm of shrapnel. It killed the navigating lieutenant instantly, cutting away the top of his head as though it were the shell of a soft-boiled egg. He fell on the deck and splattered the footplates with the warm custard of his brains. A piece of red-hot shell casing, the size of a thumbnail, entered the point of Herbert Cryer's right elbow and shattered the bone to smithereens. He gasped at the shock and sprawled against the wheel. "Hold her! Hold her true!" The order from Commander Little was blurred as the speech of a spastic. Herbert Cryer pulled himself up and, with his left hand, spun the wheel to meet Bloodhound's wild swing, but, with his right arm hanging useless, his steering was clumsy and awkward. "Steady, man! Hold her steady!" Again that thick, slurring voice, and Cryer was aware of Charles Little beside him, his hands on the helm, helping to hold Bloodhound's frantic head. "Aye, aye, sir!" Cryer glanced at his commander and gasped again, this time in horror. Razor-sharp steel had sliced off Charles' little ear, then gone to cut his cheek away and expose the bone of his jaw and the white teeth that lined it. A flap of tattered flesh hung down onto his chest, and from a dozen severed blood vessels, dark blood dripped and spurted and dribbled. The two of them crouched wounded over the wheel, with the dead men at their feet, and aimed Bloodhound at the long, low bulk of the German cruiser. Now, in the daylight glare of the star shells, the sea around them was thrashed and whipped into seething life by the cacophony of Blücher's guns. Tall towers of white water rose briefly and majestically above them, then dropped back to leave the surface troubled and restless with foam. And Bloodhound drove on until suddenly it seemed she had run into a cliff of solid granite. Beneath their feet she jarred and bucked violently. A 9-inch shell had taken her full in the bows. "Port, full rudder!" Charles Little's voice was sloshy-sounding, wet with the blood that filled his mouth, and together they spun the wheel to full left lock. But Bloodhound was dying. The shell had split her bows wide open, tore her plating, and fanned it open like the petals of a macabre orchid. The black night sea rushed through her. Already her bows were sinking, slumping wearily, lifting her stern so the rudder was no longer had full purchase. But even in death she was trying desperately to obey. Slowly she swung, inchingly, achingly she swung. Charles Little left the helm and tottered towards the starboard rail. His legs were numb and heavy under him, and the weakness of his lost blood drummed in his ears. He reached the rail and clung there, peering down on the torpedo tubes that stood on the deck below him. The tubes looked like a rack of fat cigars, and with weary jubilation, Charles saw that there were men still tending them, crouching behind the sheet of armoured plate, waiting for Bloodhound to turn and bring Blücher onto a starboard beam. "Turn, old girl! Come on! That's it! Turn!" Charles croaked through the blood. Another shell struck Bloodhound and she heaved in mortal agony. Perhaps this movement, combined with a chance push of the sea swell, was enough to swing her those last few degrees. There, full in the track of the torpedo tubes, lit by her own star shells and the gunfire from her turrets, a scant 1,000 yards across the black water, lay the German cruiser. Charles heard the whoosh, 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 whoosh of the tubes as they fired. He saw the long, shark-like shapes of the torpedoes leap out from the deck and strike the water, saw the four white wakes arrowing away in formation, and behind him he heard the torpedo officer's triumphant shout, distorted by the voice pipe, "All four fired and running true!" Charles never saw his torpedoes strike, for one of the Blücher's 9-inch shells hit the bridgework 3 feet below him. For one brief, unholy instant, he stood in the centre of a furnace, as hot as the flames of the sun.